Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Anti-Fascist Archives show number 39. The world will be plunged into an abyss. This is being recorded on May 29th of the year 2017. This Monday today is Memorial Day. That is the day set aside to commemorate those who lost their lives in America's foreign wars. Our most costly foreign war was the Second World War. And what we're going to be taking a look at in this program is what the world may very well look like in the event of a Nazi victory. I believe that just such a victory has taken place, not on the battlefield, but in what Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz referred to as the post-war. In AFA program number 37, recorded back in 1992, I talked about and chronicled how the United States lost the Second World War, and I mean that quite literally. The title, "The World Will Be Plunged into an Abyss," comes from Winston Churchill, who made the statement about what would happen if the Third Reich won the war, and I believe that they did. They just did not win it on the battlefield. They won it in the political smoke-filled rooms, so to speak, in corporate boardrooms, and in particular in the Cold War, in which not only were Nazis reinstituted at virtually every level of importance in German society, but perhaps more importantly, the creme de la creme of Hitler's spies and SS killers and military technicians were incorporated into the U.S. and Great Britain, mostly the U.S., in the form of the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit and in the context of Operation Paperclip or Project Paperclip, the incorporation of Nazi scientists into the West. The full statement by Adolf Hitler went as follows. "The world, in the event of a Nazi victory, the world will be plunged into an abyss made more sinister by the knights of perverted science." Again, "The world will be plunged into an abyss made more sinister by the knights of perverted science." And what we're going to be looking at is perhaps how those knights of perverted science may very well have structured things to look in the post-war period. This program is not going to be as tidy, perhaps, as some. It is obviously an example of that old saw, never make predictions, especially about the future. We are, in fact, if not making predictions, we are going to be looking at some very alarming and disparate indications that just such a future may very well be taking shape. We're going to be talking about Project Paperclip. We are going to be talking about AIDS and the very disturbing indications that AIDS was deliberately created, something that I have talked about in many programs. And in particular, we're going to be taking a look at an aspect of AIDS in which, or that manifests a particular gene, the CCR5 Delta 32 gene. That is one that is possessed only by purebred Northern Europeans. Not all of them, but some of them. It does not exist in any other race other than the white race, and it only exists in some purebred Northern Europeans. This gene affects an immunity, a hereditary immunity from infection by HIV. It also affects a hereditary immunity against the Black Death the bubonic plague. Now, we should point out that the latest medical thinking has it that the Black Death that affected Europe was not actually bubonic plague, which is a bacteriological disease that is carried by fleas that are in turn parasitic of rats, but rather that the Black Death was a viral hemorrhagic fever not unlike Ebola in certain respects. We're going to talk about that. And also an interesting comment that was made after one of the shows aired back in 2007. In fact, that is a program that I'm going to be re-airing in just a minute or incorporating into this program. That is For the Record program number 606, Project Paperclip and AIDS from August 12th of 2007. First, however, bearing in mind that there is a gene that afforded a hereditary immunity to the Black Death, whether that was bubonic plague or the hemorrhagic fever, we will discuss later. It may have been both. That same gene affords a hereditary immunity to AIDS. So bearing in mind the hereditary immunity to the Black Death or to bubonic plague, and also that same gene, the CCR5 Delta 32's hereditary immunity affording quality to infection by HIV, we're going to take a look at Project Paperclip or Operation Paperclip. An excellent book about that was published in 2014, just 3 years ago. It was authored by Annie, A-N-N-I-E, Jacobsen, J-A-C-O-B-S-E-N, published in hardcover by Little Brown and Company. And in Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobsen, there is discussion of some of the people who were incorporated into the U.S. defense science establishment under Operation Paperclip. One of those was Dr. Kurt, K-U-R-T, Blome, B-L-O-M-E. He was the Deputy Surgeon General of the Third Reich and was a loyal and proud Nazi, very close to Hermann Goering, the Reichsmarschall, and head of the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, and perhaps for our purposes even more close to Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS. Dr. Blome was an expert on bubonic plague. Heinrich Himmler was a big proponent of biological weapons, and in particular was fascinated with bubonic plague, believed at that point in time to be the main cause of the Black Death. Kurt Blome then undertook research under the cover of cancer research into, among other things, the Black Death or bubonic plague. Ultimately, Dr. Kurt Blome went to work for the U.S. under Project Paperclip, and he was described as perhaps the world's leading expert on bubonic plague or the Black Death, whether or not it was actually bubonic plague or the viral hemorrhagic fever. This is something, as we shall see, that would have been known to the Third Reich. But again, one of the people who really was the highest ranking official in charge with biological warfare research for the Third Reich, something that used cancer research as a cover, was Dr. Kurt Blome. In the For the Record show you're about to hear, one of the top people who worked for him was Dr. Eric Traub, T-R-A-U-B. Traub was not actually in charge of biological warfare research as reported in the book Lab 257, but he was arguably the top administrator, at least for certain key diseases, for Dr. Kurt Blome. But again, you've got Dr. Kurt Blome, top Nazi scientist, very close to Heinrich Himmler, and one of the world's experts on bubonic plague. He goes to work for the Third Reich and for their biological warfare weapons program under the cover of cancer research. He is very close to SS Chief Heinrich Himmler, who was a big proponent of using bubonic plague as a biological weapon and appointed Dr. Kurt Blom to undertake that research. Dr. Kurt Blom then becomes one of the world's leading, or perhaps arguably the world's leading authority on bubonic plague or the Black Death. Then Kurt Blom goes to work for the U.S. defense establishment. Obviously, one of the things we're asking is, to what extent was AIDS an outgrowth of that research? From Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson about Dr. Kurt Blom. The War Crimes Office had considerable information about Dr. Kurt Blom. He was Deputy Surgeon General of the Third Reich and Vice President of the Reich's Physicians League, the Reichsarztkammer. He was believed to have reported directly to Goering and maybe even to Himmler or to both. Blom had been named head of Reich Cancer Research in 1942. Alsos and the OSS presumed that this was a cover name for biological weapons work. Blom was a dedicated and proud Nazi. And later, Major E.W.B. Gill asked how Blom, a, quote, cancer expert, unquote, had been put in charge of the Reich's bioweapons program, a subject he claimed to know very little about. Blom said he had no answer for that. And then still later about Heinrich Himmler and his fascination with both biological warfare and bubonic plague in particular as a potential BW weapon. Heinrich Himmler had a layman's fascination with biological warfare. A former chicken farmer, the Reichsführer SS had studied agriculture in school. According to Kurt Blom, it was Himmler who was the primary motivator behind the Reich's bioweapons program. Hitler, Blom said, did not approve of biological warfare and was kept in the dark as to specific plans. Himmler's area of greatest fascination, said Blom, was bubonic plague. And still later. Blom then told Heinrich Himmler that if he were to experiment with plague bacterium, he would need his own institute, an isolated facility far removed from population centers. Himmler and Blom agreed that Poland would be a good place, and they settled on Neusselstedt, N-E-S-S-E-L-S-T-E-D-T, a small town outside the former Poznan University, by then operated by the Third Reich. Blom's research was to be called the Bacteriological Institute at Neusselstedt. And still later. Dr. Kurt Blom's expertise was in great demand, but his future was as yet undecided. In his Posen laboratory, Blom had made considerable progress with live plague pathogens, including bubonic and pneumonic plague. How far that research progressed remained vague, likely because it would put an unwanted spotlight on human experiments that many believed had taken place there. And still later. As for Dr. Blom, he was seen as a highly desirable recruit for Operation Paperclip. Blom allegedly knew more about bubonic plague research than anyone else in the world. But given his former position in Hitler's inner circle, coupled with the fact that Blom had worn the Golden Party badge, bringing him to America as part of Operation Paperclip remained too difficult for the U.S. Army to justify. But as the Cold War gained momentum and intense suspicion of the Soviets increased, even someone like Kurt Blom would eventually be deemed eligible for Operation Paperclip. So again, one of the top people in Operation Paperclip was Kurt Blom, the highest ranking member of the Third Reich's Biological Warfare Weapons Program, which operated under the cover of cancer research. Kurt Blom reported directly to Heinrich Himmler. Kurt Blom undertook research into bubonic plague, believed at that time to be the cause of the Black Death. And bear in mind that there is, again, the gene CCR5 Delta 32 that afforded a hereditary immunity to the Black Death, whether that was bubonic plague or a viral hemorrhagic fever, not unlike Ebola, as many now believe, remains to be determined. Kurt Blome reported to Himmler. Himmler was fascinated with biological warfare research, in particular with bubonic plague. He sets up Dr. Blome to research, among other things, bubonic plague at Neschelstedt under Poznan University, formerly at the Polish Poznan, P-O-Z-N-A-N, University. And ultimately, Dr. Blome, who then knew more about bubonic plague than anyone else in the world, goes to work for Operation Paperclip and the U.S. We're going to take a look at someone else who we're going to come back to later on in dealing with Project Paperclip. This, not someone who was involved with biological warfare research, but Dr. Walter Dornberger, D-O-R-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, who was in charge of the military commander of Peenemünde Nordhausen that crafted the B-1, the V-1 and V-2 rockets. The best known of the rocket scientists was, of course, SS officer Werner von Braun. We'll come back to him. We're going to come back to Dornberger later, too. Turning to Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson. Within 2 years of his arrival in the U.S., Dornberger had transformed from public menace to American celebrity. In 1950, he left military custody at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio to work for Bell Aircraft Corporation in Niagara Falls, New York, quickly becoming vice president and chief scientist. We're going to take a look at Dornberger and someone named Arthur Young. Arthur Young was the inventor of the helicopter, or was in charge of helicopter development, I should say, for the Bell Aerospace Corporation, or Bell Aircraft. His son-in-law, Michael Payne, who along with his wife Ruth, was one of the Oswald's apparent intelligence babysitters in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Michael Payne worked with Walter Dornberger at Bell Aerospace. And Arthur Young was someone who was very much involved with, quote, the nine, unquote. We're going to come back to that. Don't worry about that too much right now. Just remember the name Arthur Young and the name Walter Dornberger. We're going to come back to those. Now, this next segment is a long excerpt of For the Record program number 606, Project Paperclip and AIDS. This was recorded on August 12th of 2007, roughly 10 years ago.
Now, the title of the program, Project Paperclip and AIDS, refers to a program that was engaged in by the U.S. National Security Establishment at the end of World War II, in which Nazi scientists and also Japanese scientists, many of them war criminals of the First Order, were brought into the United States for their technical expertise. One of the people, for example, somebody we're going to touch on later in this broadcast, who was brought into the United States and who worked on biological warfare programs for the United States, was Dr. Eric Traub, who was in charge of virological and bacteriological warfare research for the Third Reich. That was conducted, that Third Reich research, that is, was conducted under the auspices of the SS. And interestingly, and perhaps significantly, the Third Reich's bacteriological and virological warfare program was masked. It was officially labeled a cancer research program. In AFA 16, we took a look at the National Cancer Institute's viral oncology program conducted at what had been Fort Detrick, the Army's top biological warfare research center, and the program that appears to have given rise to AIDS was also that viral cancer research program. And so it is interesting that the BW program engaged in by the Third Reich was called cancer research, and the circumstantial evidence points to AIDS as an outgrowth of the National Cancer Institute's viral oncology research program. That is to say, researching how certain viruses cause cancer. We, by the way, are going to touch ever so briefly on the SV40 cancer-causing monkey virus that is now coursing through this and other, the U.S. and other populations. We've talked about that most recently with Ed Haslam. But one of the things we're going to be looking at in this program is the possibility that the research which ultimately culminated in the development of AIDS may have been built on a foundation that comes from the Third Reich. Certainly, again, we know that Dr. Eric Traub and his assistant Anna Berger, who were in charge of BW, basically virological and bacteriological warfare research for the Third Reich, were brought into the United States under the auspices of Project Paperclip. We are going to take a look, too, at attempts, unsuccessful attempts, at bringing a Nazi war criminal named Dr. Franz Liesau Zacharias into the United States. Zacharias was based in Spain, and his name was on a list of Nazi criminals who were ostensibly wanted by the Allies so they could be brought to justice, but a knowing reading of that list, and in particular a knowledgeable reading of some of the people's CVs, their curricula vitae, suggests that some of them, including Dr. Franz Liesau Zacharias, may have actually been sought because of their expertise. Franz Liesau Zacharias, again, was based in Spain, remained in Spain until 1992. His specialty was securing monkeys and primates and other types of animals for experimental research by the Third Reich. And in particular, the Spanish press says that the experimentation program that he was involved with concerned deliberately infecting concentration camp inmates with diseases, including bubonic plague. And we're going to talk about that later on in the program. Certainly, whatever it was about Franz Liesau Zacharias that people found so intriguing, it was not the fact that he knew how to get monkeys out of Africa. That was something quite clearly that the U.S. knew how to do on its own. With two deadly evolved, I believe, at least in one case, a genetically engineered virus, namely AIDS, which appears to be an altered monkey virus, a virus that jumped from monkeys to humans. I believe it was deliberately altered. And with SV40, a cancer-causing monkey virus that contaminated vaccines, the issue of monkey viruses and what they can do to human beings is front and center here. Now, again, this program is speculative in nature, and I think that there is certainly more work to be done, but the personage of Franz Liesau Zacharias is a very, very interesting individual, and I think the interest shown in him by the U.S. at the end of the war might have implications for the development of AIDS. And there are some indications that AIDS may have grown out of research, again, whose foundation was rooted in the Third Reich. I'm going to review a little bit of information from the original AFA 16 program. One of the books that we utilized in AFA 16 was a book called A Higher Form of Killing, co-authored by Robert Harris and Jeremy Paxman. In the original Hill and Wang softcover edition, published in 1982, there is a passage which was deleted when the book was republished in 2002 by Random House. Random House is now owned by Bertelsmann, the publishing house of the SS. It is now the largest English language publisher. What is contained in the book, A Higher Form of Killing, right at the end of the 1982 edition, is some rumination about the possible development of a new type of disease-causing organism. And we're going to read first from text from The Higher Form of Killing, and in turn, that excerpts a bit of testimony from a Dr. MacArthur in a House subcommittee hearing that was drawing up the defense budget for fiscal year 1969 and 70. So what you're about to hear was something that was said on the floor of Congress in the hearings, basically in 1969. As long ago as 1962, quoting now from A Higher Form of Killing, beginning again, as long ago as 1962, 40 scientists were employed at the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Laboratories on full-time genetics research. Many others, it was said, appreciate the implications of genetics for their own work. The implications were made more specific that genetic engineering could solve one of the major disadvantages of biological warfare, that it is limited to diseases which occur naturally somewhere in the world. And then the quote from Dr. MacArthur. Now again, this is a doctor testifying in front of a House subcommittee that was drawing up the fiscal, the budget, the defense budget for fiscal year 1969 and 70. Dr. MacArthur said in 1969, "Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new, infective microorganism which could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is that it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease." And, of course, refractory, it can mean resistant to, it can also mean breaking down, just as a prism refracts light, breaks it down into its component spectra. Then the authors, now bear in mind that was said in 1969, and of course AIDS first made its appearance to the general public anyway, in exactly that time period. The authors, Paxman and Harris, in 1982 went on to comment, "The possibility that such a supergerm may have been successfully produced in a laboratory somewhere in the world in the years since that assessment was made is one which should not be too readily cast aside." No, indeed. And in For the Record program number 16, we looked at evidence that, in fact, that program did get funded. And lo and behold, a disease unlike any other appeared, a disease that breaks down, a sexually transmitted disease that destroys the immune system. We're going to talk about some of the many strange aspects of AIDS, in particular the epidemiology, later on in the program. But what we're going to do now is to review a curious aspect of this disease. I should mention that AIDS, it depends on what source one checks, but it was supposedly an African monkey virus that had existed in Africa for years, and then it was first detected very strangely among gays in three North American cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. The notion that a disease as deadly as AIDS, basically you get it, you're dead, could have existed in a part of the world where people's health and their immune systems in particular were already compromised by bad diet, inadequate medical care, or other systemic infections or parasites, as is the case in Africa, and would not have been noticed is just a bit much. It strains the credibility. One of the very strange things about AIDS, again, supposedly a monkey virus that jumped to humans, one of the very strange things about AIDS is that there is a hereditary immunity to HIV infection. But that gene is a recessive one. It is only present in the white race. No other racial group has it. And according to some sources, it is only available in basically that it is peculiar to Northern Europeans, quote, Aryans, unquote. Certainly, this particular hereditary trait is present only in white people, and according to some sources, present only in purebred Northern Europeans or Aryans. Medical people and scientific people that I've mentioned this to have, it was very strange. They actually laughed, not ha-ha laughter, but laughter in the sense of what Nietzsche said when he observed that, quote, "a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling." Scientific and medically qualified people that I've discussed this with have, not a lot of them, but without exception, they have viewed that as extremely suspicious and, in fact, indicative of the fact that AIDS was deliberately created, that nature is not going to do something like that. Here's an African monkey virus which mutates, becomes a deadly human scourge, but purebred Northern Europeans or white people just happen to have a hereditary immunity to it. It's the Aryan virus. That particular hereditary immunity appears to have also conferred limited immunity from the bubonic plague on the individuals who have it. And we're going to revisit a bit of research that we looked at in For the Record 472. In turn, we're going to access some information from the PBS.org website. It's called Secrets of the Dead, Case File, Mystery of the Black Death. And I'm going to reread some information about the CCR5 Delta 32 mutation. This is a mutation present only in white people and, according to some sources, only in purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans, unquote, that confers basically freedom from infection by bubonic plague and AIDS. Reading now from Secrets of the Dead, Case File, Mystery of the Black Death. In September of 1665, George Vickers, a tailor in the small central England village of Iam, E-Y-A-M, received a parcel of cloth ridden with plague-infected fleas from London. 4 days later, Vickers died. By the end of the month, 5 more villagers had succumbed to the plague. The panicked town turned to their rector, William Montbassant, who persuaded them to quarantine the entire village to prevent the bacterium from spreading throughout the region. It seemed like suicide. A year later, the first outsiders ventured into Iam expecting to find a ghost town. Yet, miraculously, half the town had survived. How did so many villagers live through the most devastating disease known to man? Local Iam lore tells befuddling stories of plague survivors who had close contact with the bacterium but never caught the disease. Elizabeth Hancock buried 6 children and her husband in a week, but never became ill. The village gravedigger handled hundreds of plague-ravaged corpses, but survived as well. Could these people have somehow been immune to the Black Death? Dr. Stephen O'Brien of the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C., suggests they were. His work with HIV and the mutated form of the gene CCR called Delta 32 led him to Iam. In 1996, research showed that Delta 32 prevents HIV from entering human cells and infecting the body. O'Brien thought this principle could be applied to the plague bacterium, which affects the body in a similar manner. To determine whether the Iam plague survivors may have carried Delta 32, O'Brien tested the DNA of their modern descendants. What he found out was startling. And skipping down. For a disease-causing microorganism to infect the human body, there must be a gateway or portal through which it enters into human cells. The plague bacterium works this way, hijacking the white blood cells sent to eliminate it. Traveling inside the white blood cells to the lymph nodes, the bacteria break out and attack the focal point of the human immune system. Dr. Stephen O'Brien felt that the mutated CCR5 gene Delta 32 may have prevented the plague from being able to enter its host's white blood cells, unquote. And bear in mind, too, that it also appears to function that way with regard to AIDS. Continuing, Iam provided O'Brien an ideal opportunity to test this theory. Specifically, Iam was an isolated population known to have survived a plague epidemic. Everyone in the town would have been exposed to the bacterium, so it's likely that any life-saving genetic trait would have been possessed by each of these survivors. Like a Xerox machine, unquote, says O'Brien, their gene frequencies have been replicated for several generations without a lot of infusion from outside, unquote, thus providing a viable pool of survivor descendants who would have inherited such a trait. DNA samples could only be collected from direct descendants of the plague survivors. DNA is the principal component of chromosomes, which carry the genes that transmit hereditary characteristics. We inherit our DNA from our parents. Thus, Iam resident Joan Plant, for instance, may have inherited the Delta 32 mutation from one of her ancient relatives. Plant can trace her mother's lineage back 10 generations to the Blackwell siblings, Francis and Margaret, who both lived through the plague to the turn of the century. The next step was to harvest a DNA sample from Joan and the other descendants. DNA is found in the nuclei of cells. The amount is consistent in all typical cells, regardless of the size or function of that cell. One of the easiest methods of obtaining a DNA tissue sample is to take a cheek or buccal swab. Note the following passage. After 3 weeks of testing at the University College in London, Delta 32 had been found in 14% of the samples. This is a genetically significant percentage, yet what really did it mean? Could the villagers have inherited Delta 32 from elsewhere, residents who had moved to the community in the 350 years since the plague? Was this really a higher percentage than anywhere else? To find out, O'Brien assembled an international team of scientists to test for the presence of Delta 32 around the world. Quote, "Native Africans did not have Delta 32 at all," O'Brien says. "And when we looked at East Asians and Indians, they were also flat zero. In fact, the levels of Delta 32 found in Iam were only matched in regions of Europe that had been affected by the plague and in America, which was for the most part settled by European plague survivors and their descendants." Now, again, as mentioned at the very outset of this particular passage that I've been reading, the CCR5 Delta 32 provides immunity to, basically provides protection against infection by AIDS. Again, for reviewing as we course into what I'm about to read, from this same passage. In 1996, research showed that Delta 32 prevents HIV from entering human cells and infecting the body. It also apparently conferred immunity to those who had the CCR5 Delta 32. It can provide immunity to the plague as well. Returning to the passage we were just reading, "Native Africans did not have Delta 32 at all," O'Brien says, "and when we looked at East Asians and Indians, they were also flat zero. In fact, the levels of Delta 32 found in Iam were only matched in regions of Europe that had been affected by the plague and in America, which was for the most part settled by European plague survivors and their descendants." Meanwhile, recent work with another disease strikingly similar to plague, AIDS, suggests O'Brien was on the right track. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, tricks the immune system in a similar manner as the plague bacterium, targeting and taking over white blood cells. Virologist Dr. Bill Paxson at the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center in New York City noticed, quote, "The center had no study of people who were exposed to HIV, but who had remained negative," unquote. He began testing the blood of high-risk HIV-negative individuals like Steve Crohn, C-R-O-H-N, exposing their blood to 3,000 times the amount of HIV normally needed to infect a cell. Steve's blood never became infected. "We thought maybe we had infected the culture with bacteria or whatever," says Paxton. "So we went back to Steve, but it was the same result. We went back again and again. Same result," unquote. Paxton began studying Crohn's DNA and concluded there was some sort of blocking mechanism preventing the virus from binding to his cells. Further research showed that the mechanism was Delta 32. Scientists studying HIV first learned about the gateway blocking capacity of the CCR5 mutation in 1996. Several drug companies then quickly began exploring the possibility of developing pharmaceuticals that would mimic Delta 32 by binding to CCR5 and blocking the attachment of HIV. So basically, this CCR5 Delta 32 mutation, a recessive one, conferred basically freedom from infection by the plague and also AIDS. It is only present in white people. No other racial group has it. And according to the allegations in some more information that's contained in For the Record of 472, it isn't just white people, it's purebred, quote, Aryans, unquote, or Northern Europeans. Now, a caveat in the web entry here, the web posting that I'm going to excerpt here, there is no sourcing for this. Now, obviously, one has to approach anything on the internet with great caution. The internet is an open medium, and an awful lot of what's on there is complete BS, because there's absolutely no there's no regulatory device of any kind on the internet. So one always wants to be careful with information that is disseminated via the internet. There is no sourcing of what this person is maintaining about the CCR5 Delta 32. I'd be interested to see if the literature itself does indeed corroborate what this person is maintaining. from Aryan Genes Immune to Death from AIDS, we read, "This is the nightmare of AIDS no one wants to believe." As we come closer to celebrating on December 1st, yet another World AIDS Day, let's take a good hard look at what's really going on before we pour more of our ever-diminishing, hard-earned money down yet another horrendous sinkhole. It has been found that some Caucasians who have tested positive for the HIV virus were found to take a very long time to actually develop full-blown AIDS, as they call it. It has since been discovered, since 1997, that 20% of European Caucasians have the so-called Aryan, unquote, genetic disposition. If both your parents, in other words, are of Aryan descent, it appears you can never die of AIDS, even though you might be infected. The reason for this is in the genetic coding of the killer T cells, which are part of the body's immune system's protective shield. These are the cells which are attacked by HIV, by the HIV retrovirus. The location of the attack has been discovered. It is on the CCR5 gene in the third DNA gene pair. The particular location is the Delta 32 receptor site. If either of your DNA pairs from either your mother or father is Delta 32 positive, then HIV virus can attach itself at that point. If you are Delta 32 negative, then HIV just floats around in your blood harmlessly for you. But even though you may be Delta 32 negative at both sites, you can supposedly still spread the virus. What has been discovered is that these 20% of European Caucasians are members of the Aryan gene pool. Also, it has been discovered that the farther north you go in Europe, say in Norway, Finland, Sweden, etc., you find the highest percentage of people that are Delta 32 negative at the CCR5 gene allele. That this would be a simple coincidence is beyond all human reason. Parenthetically, the scientific and medically qualified people to whom I spoke had this same reaction. Beginning again, that this would be a simple coincidence is beyond all human reason. To say that HIV suddenly crawled out of the woodwork in Central Africa by someone being bitten by a green tree monkey is one thing, but then to say that the only human gene pool on Earth that is immune to HIV is the Aryan race is a coincidence that even Howdy Doody wouldn't buy. What we are looking at is a genocide perpetrated on racial groups of the world that makes the Nazi Holocaust look like romper room. Add to that the global trafficking in drugs that specifically target minorities, the poor, and people of color. And while it may not look like the Holocaust during World War II, it doesn't have to. The AIDS epidemic isn't a mysterious virological disease, it is calculated murder, and a genocide that is beyond human comprehension. And since it is the venerated Aryan race that is immune to it, then one has to assume that they are the ones who promulgated it. Well, again, take some of that with a grain of salt, simply because there's no sourcing. There is more research to be done, but certainly it appears that only the white race and only people from Europe who'd survived the plague have the Delta, or their descendants have the CCR5 Delta 32 gene. We're going to take a look inside, too, at the possibility that perhaps some of this research may date from the Nazi concentration camps of World War II, and we are going to ask the musical question, when the U.S. brought many of these scientists to work in the United States, including war criminals of the First Order, is it possible that some of the research that they had been conducting ultimately was further nurtured and perhaps resulted in AIDS? It is, as I like to say, food for thought and grounds for further research. Now, what we're going to look at in side two is a very interesting individual, a guy named Franz Lizal Zacharias. The literature, at least some of it, maintains that he was a doctor. Others just say Franz Lizal Zacharias. Whether or not he was a doctor, as some of the literature maintains, he was certainly an agent for the Abwehr, German military intelligence, in World War II. Now, Franz Lizal Zacharias was one of a number of Nazi operatives in Spain who were sought by the Allies at the end of the war, but whom Francisco Franco, the fascist dictator of Spain, who was a close ally of Hitler and Mussolini, refused to extradite to the United States or Britain or anywhere else. The interesting thing, well, there are a lot of interesting things about Franz Lizal Zacharias, but his main job, apparently, was getting monkeys and other animals from Africa so that the Nazis could use them for research purposes, and the Spanish press maintains that that research involved spreading diseases among concentration camp inmates, including the plague. Now, recall that the plague, bubonic plague, was subject to a hereditary immunity to infection, that present only, certainly in white people, people of European extraction, and according to some sources, only purebred Northern Europeans. This is the CCR5 Delta 32 factor, which is present only in the white race, no other racial group has it, and according to some literature, present only in purebred Northern Europeans, and the farther north you go, the more readily one encounters the CCR5 Delta 32 gene, which not only confers immunity from bubonic plague infection, but also from AIDS, basically. Franz Lisa Zacharias, again, was his main job was getting monkeys out of Africa for the Nazi experiments. Whatever it was about him that the Allies found so intriguing, it certainly wasn't that he knew how to get monkeys out of Africa. Obviously, the U.S. knew how to do that, so did Britain, so did everybody else. So whatever it was about Franz Lisa Zacharias that attracted interest, it wasn't that he knew how to get monkeys out of Africa. I would point out, in terms of contamination of vaccines by SV40 and other viral contaminants, as we looked at in our discussions with Dr. Leonard Horowitz, the author of the book Emerging Viruses, the many American medical and scientific researchers continued to get monkeys from Spain long for decades after the end of World War II. One wonders to what extent Franz Lisa Zacharias might have been involved with that. Does that have anything to do with some of the viral contaminants in vaccines? That's a much more complicated thing than anything Franz Lisa Zacharias could have done, but was he aware of some of these viral contaminants? Was this a way of carrying on the war against America? One can only speculate in this regard. One point that I want to make, too, is that the Nazi experimentation for toxins and also apparently biological infectious agents, their research in World War II went from apes to humans. They began experimenting with toxins and BW agents on humans, and then they began by experimenting on apes, on primates, and then they began experimenting on humans. That mirrors the etiology of AIDS, which is a monkey virus that jumped to humans. I believe it was deliberately manufactured, deliberately altered, but whether or not that hypothesis I've been presenting for so long is accurate, certainly the etiology of AIDS jumping from monkeys to humans mirrors the progression of Nazi research, in which they began by experimenting on monkeys and primates, they began by experimenting on apes, and then began experimenting on humans. And those apes were secured for the Nazis by Dr. Franz Lisa Zacharias. Turning now to an Associated Press story from 1997. This is titled, Report, Spain Protected Undercover Nazis from Allies. It's by Ciaran Giles, or C-I-A-R-A-N Giles, an Associated Press writer. It's Dateline Madrid, Spain. It reads in part, by the way, it's March 31st of 1997. One tortured French citizens in ice baths. Another was a Gestapo agent who packed bombs into crates of Spanish oranges bound for England. They were just two of 104 Nazi secret agents in Spain whom the Allies sought near the end of World War II. But Spanish dictator Francisco Franco, Adolf Hitler's ally, refused to hand them over, according to an investigative report by El País, a Madrid newspaper. Skipping down. Another of the agents was Franz Lisau Zacharias, whose job for Hitler's Abwehr spy agency was to obtain monkeys and other animals from Spain's colonies in Africa. The animals used for experiments in Germany aimed at manufacturing killer diseases that were to be unleashed on concentration camp inmates, El País reported. And more about some of these diseases. Now, again, Franz Lisa Zacharias, his job was getting monkeys from Africa. But the U.S., the Allies, certainly knew how to do that. So they didn't need him for that. And as we will see later on in the program, I mentioned it in side one, Dr. Eric Traub, who was in charge of the program of spreading diseases, he was in charge of virological and bacteriological warfare for the Third Reich, certainly came into the United States at the end of the war and worked in, among other places, Plum Island. So this was the guy who directed the program, and Franz Liesau Zacharias was being sought as well. Another article, this from Agence France-Presse, again March 30th of 1997, the day before that last article. Its headline, Spanish newspaper publishes list of Nazis protected by Franco. State line, Madrid, March 30th. A Spanish newspaper Sunday published what it says is a list of 104 Nazis who fled to Spain after World War II and were protected by the regime of General Francisco Franco. The left-leaning daily El País said the fugitives had belonged to the Gestapo, the SS, and the Nazi military intelligence agency. The newspaper said it obtained the so-called blacklist from the Foreign Ministry archives. Allied intelligence services submitted it to the Spanish government in 1945 and asked that the people on it be extradited to Germany, but none of them were, the paper said. Skipping down. Another German on the list is Franz Liesau Zacharias, who died in Madrid in 1992 at the age of 84. A member of the German military intelligence agency, the Abwehr, he had been in charge of obtaining animals in Spanish territories in Africa for experiments in Germany, the Allies said. These experiments included spreading horrific diseases such as the plague in concentration camps, the newspaper said. So according to the experiments, at least according to this account, they were spreading diseases. Many of the other accounts also mention plague. They were spreading plague in the concentration camps. Now, again, in the concentration camps, or in Nazi research, the Nazis began by experimenting on apes, and then they progressed to human beings, concentration camp inmates. By the way, the source for the progression from apes to humans is the book The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben by Joseph Borken. I will have the specific reference in its entirety in the written description for the program. My copy of the book is in storage, but I will have that when the written description for the Record 606 is up on the Spitfire website. Now, again, note that this guy was somebody, Franz Liesau Zacharias, was somebody that the Allies sought. One wonders. This is the guy who was getting the monkeys from Africa for the Nazi experimentation, which, like AIDS, progressed from apes to humans. And one of the diseases, apparently, that was part of this program, that they were deliberately testing diseases on concentration camp inmates, one of those was the bubonic plague. Now, as we looked at inside one, bubonic plague, there is a genetic immunity to infection by the plague, the CCR5 Delta 32 gene, and that also confers immunity from infection by HIV. What I wonder is whether perhaps the discovery of this hereditary immunity, immune factor, the CCR5 Delta 32, might have been observed by the Nazis during their experiments. Obviously, there's no proof of that. It does not appear, I don't think it's a particularly outlandish question to ask. However, they were experimenting with the bubonic plague, and there is a hereditary immunity to infection by plague and AIDS that is present only in white people and, according to some sources, allegedly only present in Northern Europeans, purebred Northern Europeans. Was that that immunity discovered by Dr. Franz Liesau Zacharias or other Nazi scientists? Was that research ultimately incorporated into the U.S. research on biological warfare as part of Project Paperclip? Was Franz Liesau Zacharias collecting cell cultures, perhaps from Africans, from monkeys, from Europeans? There are more questions and answers about this fellow, but I think it's very interesting indeed that Franz Liesau Zacharias would have been sought by the Allies. They certainly there were more heinous war criminals whom we know were brought into the country for their expertise and were never punished. And one wonders about Franz Liesel Zacharias, the fellow who was getting the monkeys from Africa that the Nazis used for their experiments. They ultimately progressed from apes to humans. That's what we saw with AIDS. One of the diseases they were apparently experimenting with and that Zacharias was involved with was the spreading of plague in concentration camps, because there's a hereditary immune protection against infection by plague that also apparently provides hereditary protection against infection by HIV. Another interesting aspect of Franz Liesel Zacharias, returning once again to the Agence France-Presse article from March 30th of 1997, this report discusses many of the people who were being sought. It added that many of those on the list started up businesses in Spain after the war, mainly in the Basque Country. The Franco regime issued extradition orders against several, but never carried out the orders, it added. Now, note that many of them started businesses as, and just about anybody who's heard this program, one of the major focal points of what I talk about is the Bormann Capital Network that grew out of not only the Nazi looting program that took place during World War II, but the Nazi flight capital program that basically secreted virtually all of the liquid wealth of Europe abroad in neutral countries under German corporate fronts, and that money was used to basically finance the activities of a Third Reich gone underground, and it was basically the capital that led to the, quote, economic miracle, unquote, of Germany in the post-World War II period. The text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, is available online. People should please read that book. I would note here, though, that Franz Liesel Zacharias was among those on the list that started up a company. And it suggests that Liesel Zacharias was certainly involved with the Underground Reich, again, a Reich that went underground and perpetuated itself, not unlike the way the Mafia has perpetuated itself. And Liesel Zacharias may very well have been one of the many Nazis who was a beneficiary of the Flight Capital Program. Franz Liesel Zacharias set up a security company, SIAISA, and as we're going to see in this particular article, that company sold eavesdropping equipment, listening equipment, to the Spanish Intelligence Service. Those of you who are longtime listeners may recall the many, many times that we've used the book The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Krüger. In The Great Heroin Coup, Henrik Krüger describes Otto Skorzeny, the SS and Odessa functionary, as having virtually run the Spanish intelligence service single-handedly in the post-war period up to his death in 1975, remembering that Skorzeny slash Odessa slash Nazi link to the Spanish intelligence services. Listen to the following. Now, this, by the way, is one of those funky internet translations, so I'm going to do the best I can with this. This is from World, the Spanish publication of April 13th of 1997. It's by Fernando Garrilla and Fernando Lazaro. It's datelined Madrid, again, April 13th of 1997. And basically, it's headlined, a presumed Nazi agent directed the company that provided the listening devices to the CESID, that's the Spanish Intelligence Services. It reads in part, and again, I'm going to do my best with this funky internet translation. A presumed agent of the Nazi espionage was the president of the company that provided to the CESID, again, the Spanish Intelligence Service, all of the equipment for the purpose of eavesdropping. Franz Liesel Zacharias was president of the company SIAISA until his death in December of 1992. Since then, the company is presided over by his son, Christian Liesel von Lettow, and the vice president is his other son, Francisco Gerald. Also, and it also apparently is aided by his widow, Corina. And skipping down still further into this particular article, when World War II was finished, the Franco regime protected and denied its extradition of Zacharias to the Allies. Now, World has documentation that demonstrates that for 80 years, it maintained, was 80 years, but anyway, now the World has documented that it maintained its relationship, that is to say, S-I-A-I, that basically he maintained his relationship with the Spanish secret services. Beginning again. Now, the world has documentation that demonstrates that he, Zacharias, maintained his relation with the Spanish secret services. In particular, his company was the main supplier of equipment for eavesdropping for the CESID and maintained magnificent relationships with the then head of the Spanish Secret Services, General Alonso Manglano. So Franz Lizao Zacharias had a company that worked very closely with the Spanish intelligence services right up until his death in 1992. It may still be working with the Spanish intelligence services. By the way, among those who were investigating Franz Lizao Zacharias and his sons in that company was Judge Baltazar Garzon. He was the fellow who put out indictments for Augusto Pinochet and Henry Kissinger, among others, and more recently has returned indictments against members of the Muslim Brotherhood in connection with the Madrid train bombings